brought to you by Penguin.
The Interest by Michael Taylor. Read by James McCallum. Preface. Shortly before 4 p.m. on the 29th of September 2015, the private plane carrying David Cameron and his retinue touched down at Norman Manley International Airport outside Kingston, Jamaica. As the Prime Minister disembarked, he was greeted with a red carpet, a ceremonial guard of honour, and a military brass band playing God Save the Queen. In the shadow of a canopy on the runway, Cameron shook hands with his Jamaican counterpart, Portia Simpson Miller, and several members of her cabinet. It was the first prime ministerial visit to this former British colony since 2001, and Cameron had been invited to address a joint sitting of Jamaica's Houses of Parliament on the following day. In keeping with his commitment to spend 0.7% of British GDP on international aid, he was expected to announce £300 million of investment in Caribbean infrastructure. Accordingly, a press release from Downing Street gave details of a new fund that would invest in roads, bridges and ports to help drive economic growth and development across the region. The British Prime Minister was also expected to say something about slavery. For almost 200 years, Jamaica had been the largest and most valuable slave colony in the British Empire. And by the early 19th century, there were more enslaved people in Jamaica, over 300,000, than there were people of any description in any British city except London. Some of the legacies of this history are obvious. Jamaica's three counties are Surrey, Middlesex, and Cornwall, while the island's parishes include Manchester and Westmorland. Sabina Park in Kingston is one of the great crucibles of cricket, and the tripartite structure of the Jamaican government is modelled on Westminster. There are also pointed, personal aspects to these shared histories. For many Jamaicans of the present day are descended from the Africans whom the British had enslaved and trafficked across the Atlantic, their surnames often taken from the slaveholders who once owned their ancestors. At the same time, many Britons have ancestors among those slaveholders, and Cameron's visit had brought one in particular to public attention. Sir James Duff was an army officer and MP who, as the trustee of a Jamaican estate, had received compensation for 202 enslaved people. Duff was also Cameron's first cousin, six times removed. In the weeks and months before Cameron went to Jamaica, he had faced mounting calls to atone and apologise personally and on behalf of his country for the horrors of colonial slavery. The Barbadian historian Sir Hilary Beccles asked him to acknowledge responsibility for your share of this situation and to contribute in a joint programme of rehabilitation and renewal. Earlier that year, the Jamaican Parliament had unanimously passed a motion which stated that the country was entitled to reparations for colonial slavery. And now Professor Vereen Shepherd, the chair of Jamaica's National Commission on Reparations, declared that nothing short of an unambiguous apology would suffice. Then, shortly after Cameron's plane touched down at Kingston, Portia Simpson Miller raised the issues of slavery and reparatory justice during their bilateral talks. It followed that, on the 30th of September, when Cameron finally addressed the assembled dignitaries in the Jamaican Parliament, he would indeed speak of slavery and the long, dark shadow that it cast over the Caribbean. But he did not say sorry. Instead, Cameron appeared to represent Britain as a fellow victim of slavery, describing Britons and Jamaicans as friends who have gone through so much together since those darkest of times. He urged his audience to move on from this painful legacy and continue to build for the future. And while Cameron allowed that slavery was abhorrent in all its forms and without a place whatsoever in any civilised society, the traditional triumphalist account of Britain's connection to colonial slavery...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?